Good afternoon. I'm visiting with Barbara Glasrud, who is the director of the art department of Concordia College and professor of art history. This is the 11th of November, Armistice Day, 1988. Barbara, I guess I may call you Barbara.
Oh, surely.
What really motivated you from the very beginning? Was it your mother? Was it the marvelous weather in southern Minnesota and the colors? Was it genes? Was it an excellent early schooling? What was it that really started you into this career?
Well, I think I must have been motivated in college rather than high school. And in the years in which I went to college, we were not so career motivated during our undergraduate years. I majored in art, but I also had a minor in Greek. And my art was a combination of studio and art history. And I remember liking the art history courses a lot. In fact, I just caught fire. The first one I took was something like history of furniture, which doesn't sound very interesting, but it was to me. And after that one, I took all the art history I could get. But when I graduated from college, I still had really no very definite idea of what I wanted to do.
Even earlier, however, did you draw?
Would always you, liked to draw.
You
yes.
drew. You mm. drew, and you had the paint box. And
that's true.
Your mother could have said, might have said, maybe did, that you were destined in the area of art.
No, I don't think she did. Actually, she was a talented artist, although she never did anything with it except as a college woman and so on. She did a little painting. I still have one of her paintings that I treasure.
You are working and teaching in a very exciting time. I see where claims have been made, probably true, that there's more interest and more people involved in art and opera and music than there is in sports. And for a long time, I thought sports had the ascendancy of it by a long ways. But that particular part of our culture is exploding. Am I correct?
Well, I can't really speak for it as a whole. So I don't know if you are or not. From our own experience at Concordia, ours happens to be exploding right now because we are in a facility that we just moved into a little more than 2 years ago. This is our third year in our new building. And we have wonderful studio facilities, and we are getting more majors than we can handle now. So that's a private explosion, but I guess the market for art people has increased, yeah.
Tell me more about that marvelous building. I've only been in it once, but it seems to reflect and express the profession it's in.
Well, we were very fortunate with the building. It's an Olin Foundation grant building. We had applied for it and worked toward being considered, and eventually we were awarded this building by the Olin Foundation, who built it and furnished it with its permanent furnishings, handed us the key. So we were extremely fortunate. We're one of very few colleges who have buildings built and given by the Olin Foundation. It's a combination of speech, theater, communications, and art. So art is the northern half of the building.
It has a charm when you go in it.
Oh, it does.
You told me that you were born in Red Wing, Minnesota.
Yes.
And grew up in earlier years in Lake City.
Yes.
What county is Red Wing in?
Red Wing's in Goodhue County. Lake City is in Wabasha County.
And not being very far from Carleton, you matriculated at Carleton.
Well, it's farther than you. There was farther than you think in those days, because there's no direct way of getting there except by car. Otherwise, I think you'd have to go to Minneapolis and then down. But there were a number of liberal arts colleges. My parents were anxious for us to go to one, And I think we considered Lawrence, which was my mother's alma mater, and Grinnell and some of the other Midwest ones, but chose Carleton. I was given a scholarship there and was very happy with my choice.
You received a BA at Carleton.
Yeah.
Do you want to trace for our audience and for me your academic history just quickly?
After that, you mean?
Well, let's see. We started at Carleton.
Yes.
And then you got a master's degree
mm-hmm.
in, was that in Bryn Mawr?
It was, but it is a little more complicated than that if you want to hear about it.
Yes, I think we all would.
Good. Well, when I graduated from Carleton, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I made a most fortunate visit. I went to Minneapolis to the Art Institute and wanted to talk to someone in the administration about what I would need to do or what a career in museum work was like. And I talked to the director, and I don't know how that happened because later he seemed to be kind of inaccessible, but my mother was with me and we went in and saw the director and just sort of said, I'm graduating now, what do I need to do if I was interested in museum work? And went home for the weekend, I recall, and when we got back home, I had a telephone call, and it was from the director, and he offered me a job, which was totally unexpected. I hadn't been applying for it, but it looked too good to pass up. Very small salary, but so instead of going right into graduate work, I went to Minneapolis, and I worked at the Art Institute for through the summer, through the next winter, and the following summer. And during the course of my work there, I realized that this was what I wanted to do. I also realized that I needed graduate-level work, especially in Oriental art, because the museum has a very fine collection of Chinese art, the Pillsbury Collection. So it seemed clear to me that what I wanted to do was to go back to graduate school. And so that following fall, I did, and I went to what was the best graduate school in the country, I think, the Institute of Fine Arts of New York University. It's had an excellent reputation and an absolutely stellar faculty, almost all made up of European people who had fled because of the Holocaust. And they were among the best scholars of art history in the world. So I spent a very happy year there. I was on a small work scholarship. And at the end of that year, I got an offer to go to graduate school at Bryn Mawr, which had, the appeal for me was that the man I could study with was the foremost Oriental art historian in the world. He was an American named Alexander Coburn Soper. And I was also offered some financial help. And I was very sorry to leave the Institute of Fine Arts, but financially it was impossible to stay, so I went to Bryn Mawr, where I spent the next 2 years concentrating in Oriental art. And during the summers all that time, I went back and worked at the Art Institute in Minneapolis. So I was applying what I was learning. And then I had finished my coursework for my PhD and had done a good deal beyond the master's, but made the decision that women at Bryn Mawr were not often making. I decided to get married. And so I left after my second year there with my master's. And I don't know at that point whether I was considering returning to take my PhD. In those years, the woman really sort of gave up her career when she married. So I did not regret that. My husband was teaching at Morehead State, but he had his PhD to finish at Harvard. And so we went back to Morehead State for a year, then 2 years, because of the situation that I don't need to go into. And then he went back to Harvard to finish his degree. And, of course, I went with him. And through my wonderful teacher, Alexander Coburn Soper, I got a dream job. I was the acting curator of Oriental art at the Fogg Museum at Harvard. So for the 2 years that he was studying at Harvard, getting his degree, I was working in a better job than I had ever dreamed I could have.
How fortunate.
Well, it was.
How fortunate all the way through. Your mother and you did exactly the right thing in going to the top, you know.
Well, we didn't know we were doing it.
And always go to the top.
The funny thing is, the director, I think, was, you know, a sort of austere man, but after those 2 years and all those summers and stuff, he got to know me pretty well. And shortly before I left, he said, "Do you know why you got that job?" He said, "Because you brought your mother with you."
Very calculating. And it was Mr. Glassford's residence here that brought you to Morehead and to Concordia.
Yes.
And enabled you to join the faculty at Concordia. Something I'm sure you never regretted.
No.
Tell me something about your teaching at Concordia. You have a generalized course in art history, kind of a 101. Do your entering students meet you and take some courses?
Well, the entering students usually don't take art history. They start their art career with introductory studio courses. And I get them when they're sophomores or juniors, usually. The course I teach, the entering course, is that. But it is numbered 355, so it's normally not a freshman course. That's a general one, and it goes from prehistory to the present time in one semester. In addition to that, we have a series of courses that go through art history much more slowly. So I teach one of those a semester. They alternate every three semesters. And in addition to that, we have an honors program. And I teach an art history course that is part of the honors program's curriculum. That occupies my fall semester. In the spring, I don't teach the honors course, but instead I teach a pre-May seminar course that prepares students to go to abroad on May seminar.
Yes, I want to talk about that because you spend regularly a great deal of time overseas.
Yes.
Which, again, is a happy circumstance for you. About how many people do you have along on a given visit, we'll say, to Europe?
Last year, I think we had 26, which was a large number of students. There were also, I had an assistant, and so there were three adults in all. Some years it's much fewer. I've gone with as few as about 9. Depends on the enrollment seems to vary by year. One year it's large, the next year it's not so large, and so on.
Travel is very important for an art student, a teacher certainly of art history, because you must go. And you must look and feel and get more than a glimpse of what's available, what's there. The tourists visit. We go through, and we sometimes get somebody to take us through. And at the end, whether it's in Italy or England or France, we haven't drawn maybe a great deal. And so it needs someone like yourself to go into the history of the history and what we are actually seeing. I made some notes between 1949 and 1985. I see 2 months in England long ago in 49. Mm-hmm. In 63-64, you were in France, Germany, Italy, England, and the Scandinavian countries. And in 1971, in Greece, Turkey, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, and Italy. And in 1980, then, you went to the People's Republic of China. And that must have been an exciting trip for you.
We liked it so much, we went again in 82 to China. And then there's another trip that was since your notes. I don't know where you got those. We went around the world in, it would be 4 years ago. I had a sabbatical leave. So we went, spent a lot of time in Japan and in the Southeast Asian countries, including Thailand. And then quite a good deal of time in India. So that was another area of the world that we filled in. But all these trips you've mentioned have been with my family. They've not been Concordia sponsored.
But they were certainly productive for someone who knew exactly what she was looking for.
Yeah, I should say
Tell me something about the Orient. Now, you had specialized in it, and you had undoubtedly read a great deal about it, and you had a very impressive and informed professor. And were you disappointed when you got to China and Japan?
No, I was thrilled. No, anything but. And it was that one of the unfortunate things about my career is that I do not teach Oriental art because we only have one art historian on our faculty and there's too much demand for other courses. So I haven't had the luxury of teaching it, and therefore anything I do with it has to be extracurricular. And so I haven't done enough. But getting over there and seeing the places that I knew so well in the classroom was absolutely wonderful. And we made a big effort to go to the sites that I wanted to see, so it was thrilling.
Did you get to Qian?
Oh, yes.
My wife and I
did you go there?
Spent a week in Japan and a little over a week in China.
Yeah.
Seeing, going to the usual places that leap to mind.
Were you disappointed?
Oh, no, I was very, very impressed.
So was I.
I was impressed by the subterranean discovery, you know, which to me was the most spooky moment of my visit. It's a very large gymnasium type thing.
Isn't it,
over the diggings. It's kept dark. It's kept, in a way, silent. And these row upon rows of soldiers, each one different in the face. Mm-hmm. It's an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, it is. Yes.
I can understand why there was a developing interest on the campus at Concordia with the very interesting new building and an improvement of the gallery, because it's always interesting to visit. I want to talk also about you're quite busy with community service, and I suppose you have seen a lot of indifferent art, and you've judged a lot of bad art, as well as some good art, in the area. You have. I see that you were a member of the board of directors at the time of the organization of the Red River Art Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and which is now later the Plains Museum. And you've been, or you are perhaps, on the museum acquisitions committee.
I'm on the yes. I'm not a member of the board of directors at present, although different times in its history I've been on and off.
It seems to me that the Plains Museum has had, in some ways, a difficult time of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it secured the building with considerable enthusiasm. I was enthusiastic about it. I thought that it was a building that seemed to lend itself, but maybe I was not correct. Is it a building that lends itself to its purpose today?
Well, I know exactly what you mean, and at the time I thought so too. And I still think the spaces in it are wonderful. And it always looks very attractive. They've had to deal with lack of space, and they've moved offices to another building. And I think they're hampered by the fact that isn't it a historical building now? So they may not be able to change it very much. I don't know how to answer your question I don't suppose there is a black and white answer. It's a very pleasant building. I'm sure if they were to build, which they're far from doing, they would build an entirely different type.
I know that you've spoken many times in many places about your subject, about art, and about art in the Red River Valley. And what is your feeling about the dimensions of art, about the growth or perhaps the developing interest of art in the Red River Valley? Does it have a movement? If you were asked as a historian to judge it, and you've judged many pieces, how would you candidly appraise it?
Well, as far as what's being produced in the area? Well, I think some of the exciting parts are the regional parts, things that are not typical of our region, but that deal with our region. I'm thinking particularly of Charlie Beck, who I think is a very underappreciated artist who lives in Fergus Falls and has chosen to spend his time in that area, and he paints his locale better than anyone else could, I think. That's something that our region produces that it could not do elsewhere. Then there are a lot of other talented artists. He's the one that leaps to mind because of the regional aspect. Some of them, of course, are nationally known, going great guns in other places. As far as a movement about appreciation of art, I have to be frank here and kind of negative. I think it was a step in the wrong direction to go into the casino business. And the reason I do is I may or may not object to gambling. That's not part of our conversation here, but it seems to me that a community ought to be able to come out and state that it thinks enough of visual art to support it. And what happens when support comes in from a non-art source, such as the revenue from legalized gambling, is that many people feel it isn't necessary to support it, and you don't get the affirmation by the public that art is important.
That's a very interesting observation.
Well, they struggled before they had this source of revenue. But on the other hand, the symphony is supported by its audience without that. And I think people going to the symphony make a statement that to them, music is important. And I think that that's lacking in the support for the visual arts now.
We may be going down the same wrong road. I see that that horse racing and the lottery were somewhat sold to the public, at least as of this date, 1988, with a portion accruing to what we're interested in today. And you may very well be right. I hadn't thought of it in that term, mm-hmm. but that is interesting.
Well, the money's welcome, but the morale of the supporters seems to me suffers greatly. And I think that's wrong.
There's a great deal of things being made and things being sold, and I'm not sure what do we call that whole area of personal expression.
You mean like crafts?
Crafts work.
Crafts. Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion of much of that? And maybe that's not precisely your main interest, but is it showing improvement? Is it does it have a market? Does it have an audience?
Are we thinking about, say, quilts and pottery and that kind of thing?
I'm thinking, yes, of what's well called, I guess, the
useful arts.
Useful arts.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a difficult question to ask if its quality is improving. I think in situations where there are exhibitions, quality tends to improve because people who are doing the art to have a chance to see other people's. And generally, they enforce each other. So, yeah, I think the quality is improved.
It seems to me, just as a casual onlooker, that there seems to be an enormous amount of creative stuff, some good, some bad, being turned out. And I would consider that to be good.
It is, definitely.
Self-expression, it's a method of fitting ourselves into our culture and into our surroundings. You have been, I see, a member of the committee which set up a volunteer program at St. Luke's Hospitals, and now all the hospitals, I guess, are and retirement homes. I'm very impressed by some of the art that is being purchased, not only for business but for hospitals and nursing homes, retirement homes. At one time, maybe it was somewhat pushcart art, but now I think there's a better, more tasteful art being seen on the walls in our area.
I agree with you.
And it's encouraging.
Yes.
You're a member of the Junior League of Fargo-Moorhead.
I'm a sustainer now. Cause
and it certainly has done various volunteer services.
Yes.
In Fargo, the mayor, I guess, has taken a kind of personal interest in the competition, annual competition. And that is good for art, is it not?
Yes.
The competitive, for somebody to say, get in there and paint. And some people generated that a few years ago, maybe 20 or 30 years ago. I'm thinking of Winston Churchill, for example. Don't you suspect that he generated quite a bit of amateur art
I imagine he did.
Amateur
Other
art
people
development.
Thought, if he can do it, why can't I? Yeah.
You have a number of college committees. I see also you tell me about your campus activities as it relates to your membership on the faculty.
Well, I'm a member of the Faculty Senate because I'm the department chairman. Mm-hmm. I'm also a faculty member of the Centennial Fund Committee at Concordia. We're going to have an enormous fund drive for an enormous amount of money to celebrate our centennial. And that's a committee that takes a good deal of time, that one. Other ones that I'm on this year, I'm on a faculty appeals committee that we hope won't meet. That only meets when someone gets in trouble.
Are you referring to the college centennial?
Yes. Yes.
And
Concordia will in 1991.
91.
Mm-hmm.
Just a year or two in advance of NDSU.
That's
Fargo.
Right.
Yes.
And a year or two after Moorhead State.
And the state, with its centennial, is in uniform, in tandem with the NDSU.
Yes.
So there's a good deal of centennial activity on both sides of the river.
Yes, there is.
Did you have a family?
Yes, I have a son who is a lawyer in Morris, married to a lawyer in Morris, and they have two little children. One is two and the other one is four. My son's name is Charles Glassrud.
Have you observed that they have any interest in your profession so far?
Well, my daughter-in-law draws very well. I really can't say about my son. He's, I think, more talented in writing than in drawing.
Have you picked up a brush at any time in your...
Oh, yes. When I was in college, my major involved studio art as well as art history. And since then, when I travel, I make sketches. And sometimes I combine them with watercolor. And our faculty at Concordia has had the habit in the last several years of every 2 years having a little show of the faculty's work, the art faculty, that is. And everybody on the faculty is a practicing artist except for me, but they always include me. So I show some of the sketches that I've made as a traveler. But that's all I do.
Is the faculty display a competition of any kind?
No, not at all. But they choose...
Show what you like.
Whatever new works they're doing. And there is going to be one that begins in late November this year. And the faculty is... The studio people are very talented, so it should be a very exciting show.
Tell me about Cyrus Running. You got acquainted with him, and can you tell me something about him?
He was the man who asked me to come and teach at Concordia. And when I started, I only started part-time, and for years I just came and taught art history. I wasn't a full-time staff member. And he was very kind and understanding. It was when my son was small, and I was very happy to have only part-time work, so I could combine that with being home when he was. He was a humorous man. He also could be quite tough, and he had high standards as a teacher. I remember before he finally retired, I remember his getting kind of disillusioned at the quality of student work, classroom work that he was seeing, because he didn't think that they worked as hard as they had when he was growing up. So he had very high standards.
He had, if you want to call it the blue period, you know, he had a Mexico interval.
Yes, he did.
And weren't they extraordinary pieces?
And it affected him afterwards, I think. His work always showed that influence after he came back. They were extraordinary.
His work is hanging in some significant places.
Yes, it is.
How does he rate in the category? Do people on the East Coast recognize the name? Do they appreciate some of his pieces?
Well, I don't think he's recognized outside this area. It's almost like his pupil Charlie Beck. I think his reputation is largely regional. And probably that's because of his hard work in the region. I don't know that he ever really labored to get his work known outside.
There was a Clay County farmer, I guess, who did some primitive art, and whose pieces are hanging in some rather impressive places. I'm speaking of...
Is it Helmicky?
Of Helmicky.
Helmicky,
Mr.
yeah.
Helmicky.
Mm-hmm.
Very charming pieces.
Yes.
Some of them large, some of them growing in value.
Yes.
Yes. Do you have any, before we end this interesting conversation, and I want to thank you for it, do you have any observations about your profession? Do you have any conclusions that you've drawn at this time in your career?
Well, I did not set out to be a teacher, obviously, telling you about my earlier background, but I have enjoyed working with students, and the enjoyable thing is revealing this sort of world to them. And I think my most rewarding experiences are, very rewarding experience, of course, is going with a group to Europe and being able to show them these things that I've taught them about. But another rewarding experience is getting contact with former students who have later traveled and who have taken the trouble to write or come in and who have said, I want you to know that I saw such and such in the Prado and I thought about art history. And sometimes they say it's the most valuable course I ever took, which doesn't, you know, reflect on me as much as it does on the subject. But the real reward has been that I have been able to open their minds to a new area.
That must be a gratifying gratifying thing to have someone write or speak in terms of that.
Yeah, it is. But I truly don't mean it egotistically, because I think any art historian probably has that same experience. But the big thing is that it is possible to live a useful life without knowing anything about art. But you do add a dimension when you do.
That's charming. I went down, you know, the Italian corridor, at Florence, I was trailed through, you know, the great attractions. But the thing that my escort, and I think we paid him so a small amount, you know, was the thing that he was particularly interested in showing me was the high water mark of the Arno.
Yeah.
And he, everywhere we went, he wasn't worried so much about the statuary explaining it as he was to pointing out what terrible damage the Arno River had done.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, it was around early 50s, I guess, 1952, 53.
Well, no, the flood was in 66. So it must have been
I guess that
trip.
Was one of the later trips.
It must have been, because it was 66.
I have been to Europe three times, and I have in the last 4 years since 1984, my wife and I have visited 10 countries.
Wow!
We really needed you along, I suppose, to really interpret what we were seeing. But we always make the museums, and we always make those clusters of art. Well, this has been very interesting, and I'm sure that that posterity is going to have an interesting glimpse here of our 1988 Concordia and elsewhere. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, I've enjoyed it too. Thank you.